Good morning. Thank you, Tom, for that version. It is helpful to hear what may be for many of us a very familiar text in a new way, to hear perhaps things we did not hear before. We are entering Advent with the gospel story in the latter chapters of Matthew's gospel. And it comes after a series of discussions Jesus has with religious leaders. And in this chapter, chapter 24, Jesus is discussing the end of the age with the disciples. And they have asked for a sign. How will we know? And underneath that question, how will we know, I hear, what will we do? What are we to do? How will we handle it? Who shall we be, perhaps? And Jesus warns them in the series of things that he discusses with them not to be led astray, even though a lot of worrisome things are going to happen. There will be lots of disruption. There will be lots of conflict. Hold fast. The one who endures to the end will be saved. Indeed, the litany of things that will happen, nation against nation, famines, earthquakes, false prophets who lead people astray, sounds very dire and very familiar, I think, for us even today. To our 21st century ears, where we can be aware of events that happen around the globe in an instant, it sounds familiar. I have wavered back and forth over the past while thinking, how bad could it get? Oh, it can get that bad. And we go on. Of these gospels, of the four canonical gospels, Matthew's is the one that highlights from the beginning and throughout Jesus' Jewish identity. In the birth narrative, Jesus' lineage is traced back to Abraham through David. He is the son of David. He is the son of Abraham. And we remember that Matthew's genealogy is also the one that breaks tradition with how genealogies are told. The son of, the son of, the son of. Matthew, perhaps subversively, some would say, and I would agree, includes four women: Tamar, Rahab, Ruth, and Bathsheba, women who, for various reasons, might be considered, we don't talk about them. They might be considered outcasts. And I think that memory of what happens at the beginning of the gospel, the way that the gospel writer encourages the listeners and the hearers of this word to not only remember who we are and where we are and what's going on around us, but remember who came before us and what they did and how we might carry their stories forward and learn from them, and how in this series of discussions about how we should face the future, remember the past. Chapter 24 takes place, there's other reasons than the future to be worried about, after the destruction of the temple, and it chronicles an uncertain period concerning leadership, how the community should face the future, how shall we be, what can we know about what to do. The story is written, these discussions are happening in the wake of collective, communal trauma. And the text today, many of us of a certain age might have been taught to understand that scripture here as something that you should be worried about if you want to go to heaven. The Left Behind series of books, the late great Planet Earth book written in the 70s, were books that focused on the end times and served as warnings for Christians. Don't be left behind. Don't be like the ones who didn't do it right, who didn't get it right. Your prize for living in the right way is to go into this certain future. And too bad for those poor suckers that didn't get it right. They will be left behind. It was so scary, y'all. I don't know who remembers that, but it's like, okay, so what do we do with that? But if we listen to this discourse of Jesus through the lens of the whole gospel message, a continuation of the story of God's people, beginning with those ancestors of Jesus and our ancestors in the faith, the idea that we are to cooperate with one another, we are to serve one another, we are to work for justice for each other, for one another, with one another, and in particular, the ones who are most marginalized. And in the language of the prophets, those marginalized are often spoken of as the widow, the orphan, and the foreigner. Those people who don't have the regular line of people to take care of them. It is the task of the community. This is the mark of God's people, to know who they are, to know where they are, and to care for them, because they are our own. In the last 2 weeks, we've heard about power and consent. What a wonderful way to enter into the season of Advent, thinking about how we use our power, what kind of power do we have, how do we use it, and what do we say yes to? What do we say, yes, I agree with that, I go along with that, I will participate in that thing? What if this text for today is an invitation to think more deeply about how we might cooperate with one another so that we all win, whatever winning looks like, but so that none of us is snatched away unawares by the powers that be, and none of us is left behind? Just a few days ago, on November 18th, Dolores Williams, a Black womanist theologian, died. She is one of the foremothers of womanist theology, and her work has been foundational to my own theological and ecclesial understandings. The term womanism was coined by novelist and essayist Alice Walker, and she supplied a definition in her 1983 essay collection. Another scholar, Layli Phillips, defines womanism this way. Womanism is a social change perspective rooted in Black women's experiences and everyday methods of problem solving in everyday spaces, extended to the problem of ending all forms of oppression for all people, restoring the balance between people and the environment, and reconciling human life with the spiritual dimension. And this is the way that I have understood it when I first was taught about this theological pathway in seminary. And indeed, I learned about the death of Dolores Williams on social media from one of my professors. And so I think in terms of lineage and ancestry, these kinds of things as well. Who taught us what we know? Who has carried us forward with thinking outside of the box, with thinking outside of the box in ways that allow that box, that container, to be larger? It is not just about Black people and Black women, or it sounds like it is, but that trajectory is, how do we all get free? And I think that that is the wisdom of the prophets as they outline, if you take care of the orphan, if you take care of the widow, if you take care of the stranger or the foreigner, y'all, it's going to get better for all of us. If we carry forward those who are the least. And so this way of thinking about theology through Dolores Williams and other scholars is not an invitation, as some might hear, to separation, but a way of opening possibilities for the good of all by focusing on the forgotten, the marginalized, and the least. And Dr. Williams' most known work Sisters in the Wilderness, The Challenge of Womanist God Talk, draws on the biblical figure of Hagar, mother of Ishmael, Abraham's first son. This mother and son who are cast out of Abraham's household, yet they are not cast out of God's story. These ways of remembering the least in Scripture, the women in Matthew's genealogy of Jesus, the abandoned Hagar, who is not destroyed, but who survives, who encounters God in the wilderness and names God and is able to save her child, to make a way out of the way that some of my ancestors talk about it, to make a way out of no way. This seems to me to be at the core of Jesus' words to the disciples. Two men will be working in the field. What might they know of each other's struggles? What don't they know? How have they been encouraged to share their stories, to share their fears, to share their longings? Working in the field. Two women will be husking corn. How might they together devise a way to support one another during uncertain and difficult times? When the world as we know it shifts beneath our feet, when the times are unstable, uncertain, and we don't know what the outcome will be, keep awake. Jesus reminds the disciples, don't forget the things I told you, the things you know because you have devoted yourselves to God and God's people. These times will not be the times to think only of ourselves, because that's the trajectory, right? What's going to happen to me? What's going to happen to mine? And Jesus, I think, encourages us to always, always, always think, what's going to happen to us, the collective, the community? How might we be there for one another? And indeed, by the next chapter, Jesus is very explicit in the directives. Feed the hungry, offer drink to the thirsty, welcome the stranger, clothe the naked, visit the prisoners. The work is not done. The work is even harder now, and you may be tempted to go it alone, to forget why I am here, Jesus reminds, why we are all here. Remember those who are forgotten, outcast, relegated to the bottom of the hierarchy, because all of these, Jesus says, they're me. All of these are me. Benita Rockingham is an activist, a Black Mennonite woman who works at the intersections of agricultural law and education. She advocates for adoption reform and recently published an Advent journal for transracial adoptees, as she herself is, who are deconstructing their faith in coordinating with an organization called Be the Bridge. She currently serves on Mennonite Church USA's Women in Leadership Steering Committee and also the Resolutions Committee. Busy advocate and activist and thinker and doer. And she very often ends her writings and her speakings with this sign off that I will leave with you, with us this morning. Her refrain that I see so often, and it makes my heart feel better: we get free together. We get free together. May it be so.